Hello there, everybody. This is Brett Shishkoff for the No Look Pass, and I have Brian sitting across from me. Why don't you say hello to everybody, Brian?
Hello, everybody.
This is a show where we talk sports. And I don't know about you, Brian, but this is one of my favorite parts of the week, is being able to sit down and just have a nice old chat about our lovely sports teams here in Chicago, and then covering a few other things along the way that we feel are of importance in the wonderful world of sports.
Part of the week, we talk about sports every day.
This is very true. We talk about sports every day, and so this is just the overflow.
This is the recording of it.
This ends up being some of the things that we talk about throughout the week, because otherwise we'd just be sitting here in front of the microphone all week talking about it. So why don't we just get right into it?
Yes.
We have a baseball team here in Chicago that's in a playoff run, and they're known as the Cubs. They're down 2-1 currently.
Mm-hmm.
To the LA Dodgers. What have you been seeing in this series so far?
Well, as everybody has seen, the Cubs aren't hitting.
Mm-hmm.
And I was kind of surprised because yesterday, the last game they played that they lost, Joe Madden, him too, he changed the lineup. And I knew they needed to do something, but I was expecting something a little more zen from him. Mm-hmm. I remember, I don't know if you remember, way back in the Michael Jordan days, they had a playoff series against the Knicks, and they were going to Game 5, which would be played in New York.
Okay.
And once they got there, Phil Jackson took them to see the Statue of Liberty. And I was expecting something along those lines from Joe Madden. Because I thought changing the lineup was sort of like something that would sort of embolden the Dodgers and thinking, yeah, you know, we've got them now. Uh-huh. And also, I think that looking at Javier Baez,
mm-hmm.
he was a little bit confused because he was moved out of his previous batting spot, and he'd been hitting where some of the others hadn't. So
right.
I was a little surprised by that.
Did they move him up in the order? Is that what they ended up doing?
I think so.
Okay. Yeah, trying to probably make it a little bit difficult for them to not be able to pitch around somebody. Maybe that's normally why they move guys around that are hitting really, really well.
And he started Soler, and he moved Zabriskie.
Okay.
Behind Rizzo, as opposed to batting in front of him.
Huh. Okay.
Zobrist.
Yeah, okay.
I don't know what my mind is. But, yeah, so that was kind of surprising. So, but, you know, they just need to get over it. You know, maybe they could go to Disneyland or something and just start hitting.
Yeah. They have another game tonight. We've got Lackey going. Hopefully we can see those bats waking up. I believe they're facing their youngest pitcher.
Yeah, he's 20 years old.
Yeah. I'm drawing a blank on his name, unfortunately.
They say he's got good stuff. But yep. See, that's an additional problem, because if the Cubs have never seen him,
mm-hmm.
you know, it may take them a time or two through the lineup in mm-hmm. order to get a read on him, you know, because I don't know if there's a lot of information about him in the scouting reports.
Yeah, I'm sure that they're going to be relatively as prepared, at least film-wise, to know what his tendencies are against righties and lefties and try and figure out something. You were kind of making a joke that we were kind of talking about Kershaw and, like, getting him to move around if he ends up starting two more times because of him recovering from the back surgery. I thought that was kind of an interesting take, and that was something that I noticed, at least in the start with Kershaw, is you've seen a relatively patient Cubs team getting deep into counts with most pitchers, and they seem to be pressing a little bit. I don't know if the pressure's getting to them, or if it's just they felt like they had the best opportunity of getting to Kershaw early in counts better than if they got to see more pitches. I'm not entirely sure, but I think moving forward, they have to get back to what they were doing well, which is basically seeing lots of pitches and just getting these starters into deeper counts. Because when you get to the Dodgers bullpen, I think they have a few spots in their bullpen that you can get to maybe a little bit easier than some of their starting pitching that you're going to see, especially with Kershaw. I'd rather be facing their bullpen sooner than having to face Kershaw for eight innings. So do you think that's a good tactic? Did you see anything in that Kershaw start that made you like think that they needed to swing early in the counts? Or do you kind of agree with me on the be a little bit more patient and let the pitches come to you?
Well, yeah, I think in that situation where he had pitched a couple of times already, pitched a full game, and coming back on short day's rest, mm-hmm. being patient would be, and generally they are a patient team, but sometimes I think with some pitchers, players feel that they need to get them early in the game mm-hmm. before they really settle in and their stuff really starts to work for them. Mm-hmm. You know, they get really comfortable. So, it'll be interesting to see. I'm thinking that, they can't keep using this guy too many more times. They're going to go to that well, and it's going to be dry mm-hmm. at the wrong time. But you mentioned who's pitching for the Dodgers tonight. It's Maeda. He's 16-11
okay.
mm-hmm. on the season, and he's 20 years old. So I don't know if the Cubs – so he's got some – film out there, so I'm sure he's been scouted, and mm-hmm. hopefully the Cubs will hit better. But, looking at them yesterday, looking at Rizzo's face and the look on Russell's face, they do look like, they're a bit worried. And even Javier, whereas before he was very confident in playing mm-hmm. Without really being too much in his head, he looked kind of confused yesterday, I think, after he was moved around in the batting order. So they need to get over that and just relax and play ball, because they've been a loose team all season long, mm-hmm. and now it seems that they're tightening up. And I think the problem is more with them than it is necessarily with the Dodgers.
I can agree with you on that. And like I said, I think you're a part of the Cubs. You have a fan base in a city that's behind you and really, really, really itching for a World Series win for this organization. And I just wonder if, like, they were with another organization that didn't have the same type of pressure. There's always pressure to win a World Series, but when you have 108 years since the last I think it was 1908 and we're 2016, so yeah. When you have that long of a period, your team mentally has to be very, very strong. And it definitely seems like at least some of the moves that Joe Maddon has been making, I know like Addison Russell has been kind of struggling a little bit with his bat, and then bringing in to pitch hit last night, Hayward. I wasn't entirely sure why you'd bring in Hayward to pitch it for Russell, because Hayward isn't really hitting that much better, I don't think.
No, but he did get a hit. I think it was a double. I think in the second game, if not the first game.
Okay.
And the Dodgers did have a right-handed pitcher on the mound, so I think he was mm-hmm. going with the percentages.
Okay.
So, so hopefully his back will wake up. But, and then he took Russell out of the game and put Baez over there at short. And he did that during the season with a few players, and mm-hmm. They always come back and respond. So maybe that'll get Russell's competitive juices going, because he needs to hit, of course, and so does Rizzo, and all of them really. So, but they just, like I said, they just need to relax, you know. And the thing about it that the fans are waiting for a championship is that, they're used to waiting. So if they don't win it, it'll be a disappointment. But, the fans can handle it. So they just need to relax.
Yeah, I agree that they need to relax. But I think it's also something where this is supposed to be their year. They've been at the top of the standings almost the entire season. And they've made it look easy. And I think that that's why you might have even more panic than normal, is just because last year their team wasn't really favored to get you know, as far as they did, like, people thought, okay, probably wild card, but no one thought that they would get to the NLCS. Everybody was thinking Cardinals more than likely. So this year they are favored, and now, you know, you have a little bit of a struggle in this NLCS once again. Different team. Last year was the Mets, and this year it's the Dodgers. So I just wonder, like, you know, we saw similar pitching from Arrieta last year to this year. Now they have Lackey coming. He's, what is it, 20, I think they said 27, 22 starts that he's had in postseason.
Yeah.
So he's very experienced. He knows how to pitch in these games, which is always nice to have the veteran guy who's been here countless times. So I think he's going to hopefully steady the team from the pitching side of it. Hopefully take care of some of the bleeding that's been happening for the Cubs, and hopefully we get a few of these bats going, and we'll have an even series after tonight.
Well, they just need, I don't know, maybe they need to get bad or something. You know, I mean, the Dodgers, really. I mean, the Dodgers barely made it in the playoffs, mm-hmm. you know, and they got lucky. Well, I won't say they got lucky, but they beat the Washington Nationals by making all kinds of substitutions and moves with their pitchers and mm-hmm. bringing Kershaw in to pitch when he wasn't supposed to pitch and all these things. So they just need to stop, you know, focusing and get out of their head so mm-hmm. much and just go and play baseball.
Yep.
Maybe get a little mad. And, you know, really attack the game and play the game hard, you know, mm-hmm. run the bases, that kind of thing, you know. That's how I'd approach it. I'd be like, enough is enough. I'm sick of this, and I'm sick of these Dodgers, and uh-huh. I'm sick of L.A. Let's just go out and play ball.
Besides the Cubs, they, you know, we really don't have too much on the White Sox side of things, but I do want to kind of touch on the ALCS a little bit, just to kind of, you know, if the Cubs are able to get into the World Series, who they would be potentially facing. And we have the Indians, and we also have the Blue Jays, and right now the Indians are up 3-1. Indians are just rolling. They seem to be the most relaxed team, at least going through this playoff run. They haven't really had too many issues with the teams that they've played in their playoff run so far. Toronto, do you think they can make a comeback being down 3-1?
Well, yeah, they certainly have the offense to do it. Well, whether or not they will, I don't know, because they've been in this position last year, at least, and a few other years, and they've come up short. So, but I think the Indians are probably going to win. I mean, mm-hmm. it's 3-1, so I don't really think Toronto is going to beat the Indians 3 games in a row.
Right, I agree. It's really difficult.
Yeah, so mm-hmm. it looks like the Indians have done it with. And the thing of it is it's a veteran team, and they know how to go about their business, and they play evenly, and they get great performances from their pitchers and well, really all their players.
Yeah, and I think the aspect
consistency.
And having a coach who has been in these type of playoff runs before with Boston, with Francona, I think it, you know, it's always a good thing to have a coach who's been there before and knows how to get a team motivated for big series. The one thing that you have to pay attention to, I think we were kind of talking about this earlier, is with the Indians, if they do win today, they're off for almost a week. Like, you know, they wouldn't play until next Tuesday, depending on how long the series goes with the Dodgers and Cubs. Being off for that long can get your team kind of a little out of sorts, and the bats might quiet down, pitching might be a little rusty, you don't really know. So that is the one thing that whoever ends up playing in the World Series against potentially the Indians would be the one sitting for a while, and we'll see how that affects at least game one of that series.
They could get rusty, yeah.
Yep. Other than that, anything else?
Didn't the White Sox do something?
I know they moved. They actually are considering bringing in Chris Getz for a position in their higher upper office. Oh. Of that's all I've heard. Nothing about players on the field, but ex-Sox players being part of the organization again. Of course. That's all I've heard is basically Chris Getz being able to be part of that. That's all I've heard from Sox. Nothing too exciting.
Of course.
We'll move on. We do have a Bears team that's playing, I guess, football. they're trying. What'd you see over this past weekend against the Jacksonville Jaguars?
It's the same problem they've had all season. They just can't finish games.
Yep.
They have gotten deeper in the games where they keep the lead, but then they always relinquish it at the most inopportune time, and that seems to be their problem. They should be getting back at some point, hopefully, McPhee and I guess maybe Pope, so that they can have more of a pass rush, because right now their pass rush is named Willie Young. So
that is correct, and he's a stud. He's definitely doing all he can. But when you're the only guy, it makes it really, really difficult to be a consistent pass rush when you're by yourself.
Yeah, and they just and mostly it's been when they get to the red zone, they just can't score consistently enough. They wind up kicking a field goal or something else happens. Mm-hmm. So that's their story. Otherwise, they'd probably have a pretty decent record.
They've been in most of the games. I think the only one that they really weren't in, actually, was it the Cowboys game that they...
Yeah, probably.
And then the Eagles game, I think, ended up got a little out of control. But the rest of them, it seemed like they've kind of been hanging in there. And it's just a few plays here and there that go the wrong direction that cost them a game. And that's unfortunate because it just feels like they're just missing that one piece to be able to be... more a maybe like a 500 team, or you know, they're one in five currently. Feels like they should be more of like a maybe a 3-3 team, or even 4-2 team with some of the games the way that they went. They were in most of them, and
yeah.
So this week it ends up they have the Green Bay Packers, and it ends up being tomorrow, a Thursday nighter. I think this could be a possible game that they could sneak past the Packers. And here's why. They are missing Eddie Lacy. He is injured. He'll be out for a few weeks. Randall Cobb is banged up. They actually don't know who they're going to have as their running back. They brought somebody off of their practice squad. And then they also brought over Nile Davis from Kansas City, who was okay in a couple fill-in games a few years back, but hasn't been able to get back on the field since then. And then... they're just offensively struggling. They're having trouble getting the ball to Jordy, and Aaron Rodgers just doesn't look like the same guy. So,
yes, but they're still 3-2.
They are still 3-2, and they did lose to
Minnesota and Dallas.
Minnesota and Dallas, no yes, who are some pretty tough teams. Dallas has actually been surprising me, even as a Cowboys fan, of how well that they've been playing with a rookie quarterback, and the defense I felt has been kind of lacking. But they've been able to shut down teams enough to be able to, you know, only be giving up 14, 18 points somewhere in there most of these games. So. The Packers themselves, it's just, they seem like a team lost currently. And I think this might be a game that the Bears might be able to steal. I don't know if it's going to be possible because it's in Lambeau.
Right.
But I think if there is a time for the Bears to pounce and be able to take one, this is the time with how banged up they are, their defense, their main cornerback, Sam Shields, is still banged up from a concussion.
They've been passed on
all over the place.
Well, I seem to remember someone saying that Green Bay might have a tough time of it this year at some point.
I think that was you, and I was the one disagreeing with you completely. So,
but
kudos to you, my friend.
Well, this is they're still, like I said, 3-2, and they still have time to right the ship. And I don't know. I think maybe if Aaron Rodgers talks to his brother, maybe he can start playing better. I don't know. But that's kind of interesting. But, this is the type of situation where the Bears could come in and steal one. Because they have, I think the offense is good enough. They can move the ball. All they have to do is finish and score. course, I don't know if they'll have Josh Sitton. He's got an ankle and he may not play.
Yeah.
And
I honestly really feel like Hoyer has been good at like managing the team, but I think him saying that he's not going to force balls to Alshon, I think in some circumstances, especially in the red zone, trying to punch it in, these are situations where you need to put it up and give your main guy on offense a chance to jump up and catch you some touchdowns. And I don't think Brian Hoyer is really doing that enough to be able to give him an opportunity to succeed. And even Alshon has been very vocal about not being happy with the way that they are running the offense in the red zone, which it's definitely showing that they're having some struggles. And I think at some point you have to use a guy who can take over a game like Alshon can. You have to use that weapon. And I don't think they're using it quite enough.
No, I think that he needs to be more aggressive. Hoyer does.
Yep.
And, of course, remember the Bears beat the Packers last year in Lambeau, which was a big surprise.
Yep.
So there's nothing to say they can't do it again this time.
I agree. And like I said, I think that they are in a prime spot to do so. With the Packers themselves, they have been, all last year they were without Jordy. So I think they're now having this big piece back. They're now trying to find that magic that they had from a couple of years ago. And it's just like a few years ago when Aaron Rodgers came out and said, relax to all the fans. I think it's that same thing. They're trying to figure things out all over again, being able to figure out how to run this offense and what weapons to use when. And now not having that running game, you might see a more pass-happy Aaron Rodgers with far less runs. From your running back position, and maybe he starts running more. I don't know.
Yeah, so if he runs more or they pass more, then they definitely, the Bears, I mean, will need a pass rush.
Yep.
So I don't know if they're going to dust off McPhee or just wait a little bit longer to put him in the game.
Mm-hmm.
But it should be a kind of a fun contest.
Yep. They're always great to watch. I don't know why they have the Packers up by 9. Most of these games lately have been really close, except for that one, I guess that one blowout game 2 years ago.
Well, the Bears can't score.
What? The Bears?
Bears have trouble scoring.
Yeah.
That's probably why.
I don't see it being a 9-point victory for the Packers. I think it'll be closer than that. I think most of these games tend to be really, really competitive. Anything else that you saw over the weekend football-wise that kind of stuck out to you?
Well, it wasn't over the weekend, but I don't know if you heard it or not, but Bill Belichick is not happy with Microsoft Surface tablets that a lot of the NFL teams use on the sidelines, mainly because it's not necessarily the tablet. It's just that he's had problems with it because it has failed because either the Wi-Fi goes out or the batteries don't last.
Mm-hmm.
So he's going back to his printed sheets, his laminated sheets, and there was a picture of him, taking the Surface and slamming it on the ground.
Oh, really? Yeah, when technology fails you, it is very frustrating, especially when you're supposed to be having your entire playbook on there. And they're supposed to use it to, like, look at film and like, break down certain situations for games. And if that's not working correctly, you're definitely at a disadvantage if the other side's tablets are working. I know that they have, like, a rule in the NFL that if one side, their tablets stop working, the other side's supposed to stop using tablets. And they have, like, the fallback of being able to use the, good old-fashioned paper.
And also I think it might be sort of problem as a user, because during a game you need to make quick decisions, and it sometimes takes a couple seconds for certain things to load.
Right.
So maybe it's not happening fast enough for him using this tablet. So he is going to discard it and not use it anymore. And I saw another coach this past weekend. I forget who it was, but he didn't use it either. He was using the laminated sheets. So much for technology and football.
I forgot. I think it's Chip Kelly. He has like one of the biggest playbooks in football, and it was crazy because it was just like I saw one week a few years back when I could actually see, and it was like literally, I don't know, maybe like 3 foot tall.
Yeah.
And it had it on both sides of that sheet where it was just like
in different colors. You could see the colors. Yep.
So it's pretty crazy on how many plays that these players have to remember, and like where they're supposed to be. So you kind of have to give them credit for being able to remember the whatever hundreds of plays that a coach can come up with, and knowing where they need to be. And then there's other coaches that they just want to do a few plays that they run really, really well. And I think like it's Andy Reid who has one of the smaller playbooks, and just likes to use kind of like 3 players mainly for his offense, and then he'll sprinkle in a couple other receivers. So it's interesting on how that play calling goes with different coaches and what they want to use and personnel wise.
But now I'm thinking, what would he be using it for? I mean, he doesn't call the plays, does he, Belichick? As far as you know, or
I don't believe so. I think he has a defensive coordinator and offensive coordinator,
right.
And he gave up defensive coordinating quite a few years back. I think he did it for his first few years when they were doing their Super Bowl runs,
right.
And then within the last maybe 7-8 years, I think they've had a defensive or offensive coordinator. But I think he oversees like what they're calling. And then, like I said, they are able to look at film and being able to determine what they need to do. And he's able to kind of give them some suggestions on, hey, I think we need to blitz here. Or they were kind of like in the Super Bowl when they won that, he would just say that he interacts with the coordinators quite frequently. Most of the time you'll see one coordinator on his right and another quarter on his left, and they'll kind of give him opportunity to make suggestions, especially like on fourth down plays and that type of thing. He has to be the one to kind of make those decisions. And I want to say that they possibly have just started sending the replays to them on those tablets too. So that could be other reason why they have those tablets, and when they're not working and you need to, you know, replay really quick because you need to throw that flag out before the next snap, you know, time is everything in football.
All right. Exactly.
Yep. All right. Well, moving on from football, we have hockey. Hockey, hockey, hockey. We got some Blackhawks. We got some real hockey. And they're 2-2. They've won their last two. They lost their first two. So they're on the upswing. Have you been able to watch any of the games?
No. I think they do have a game Saturday night that will be on free TV.
Yeah, they actually had last night's game was on, I think it was Channel 5.
Channel 5?
I think it was on NBC.
No, it was on, it had to be on Sports.
On NBC Sportsnet?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, it could be. I don't remember. It was Philadelphia, the Flyers, and the Blackhawks. But what I'm liking so far of what I've noticed for the Blackhawks is we have the role players kind of stepping up, like, and they're scoring. And so you have all of the lines kind of contributing so far. And then in the negative side of it, what I've noticed is the penalty kill,
right.
Not great. It's 46% that we're killing penalties. That is not a good percentage to have. I know most years it seems like they're around 80% of their success rate, or maybe even higher than that. So I think it is because you got a lot of younger players, and maybe they're put in positions that they're not entirely used to. But it's good to see that they're scoring from multiple lines. It's not just the Kane-Panarin line. Hossa scored his 500th goal last night, which is, you know, pretty
kudos.
Impressive. 500 goals is a good milestone.
Mm-hmm.
Taze has not yet scored a goal, but their line mate, Hossa, and Taze, Panic, he actually now has 4 goals already, which is pretty good to see. And not going to say that he's going to sustain that, but you know, if you can get Taze going and all 3 of those guys on that first line, it's going to be a really, really tough team to win, especially if they continue to score 7 goals a game and that defense starts getting rolling. They played a little bit of an easier team last night with Philadelphia, but even on Saturday they were playing, was it Nashville they played,
right,
and they scored 5 goals. So they're scoring quite a bit. They just need to stop the goals from going in, and unfortunately their penalty kill is a little lacking at the moment.
Well, hopefully as the season goes on, they'll improve that, because they have been a good defensive team.
Yeah, I think they will. They have really good defensemen. They're six deep, and so I do feel like they're just trying to, you know, figure things out. A lot of new pieces that have to get used to each other and where they need to be. So, and when you only have like a 2-week training camp, it takes some extra time. And most of the time, those starters weren't really playing with each other. So I feel okay with where they're at. It was kind of rough seeing them start off going 0-2. But now being 2-2 and evening it up, I think they'll figure things out over these coming weeks, and we should start to see a pretty fast, well-groomed team that Coach Q can be able to work with. And I think they'll have quite a few off days coming up, because they've had, I think, they're the only team that has played 4 games so far. Everybody else has either played 2 games or 3 games, so they're a game ahead of everybody else.
Yeah, and they play again Friday, and then they play Saturday in Toronto, and that game is on Channel 9, so I have a chance to see them for the first time. So do you think that Coach Q made a good call by sitting Riemsdyk?
I think so. He's been struggling a little bit, and when you have a few other defensemen that you feel a little bit more comfortable with, I think Coach Q is doing what he needs to do to be able to kind of let TVD figure out what he needs to do to kind of get his legs back underneath him, because I think he struggled a little bit during training camp, and maybe get his confidence back. He just kind of spread him out a little bit more, and then eventually you can start to increase his minutes. But I think he'll be okay. They have been kind of fishing him out there to see if they could trade him. So he needs to get going a little bit for them to get full, you know, something really, really good from him. But I have heard a little bit of them possibly thinking about trading him elsewhere. No one's bitten yet, but, you know, if he gets going, then I think people will be interested. Bowman's known for basically making moves throughout the year, so I think he'll be willing to see if he can do anything with these young players if they're playing well, seeing if he can either keep them, if Coach Q thinks that there's going to be more there, or sell them high and see if he can get some more veteran type I guess leadership on those last two lines, because I think they're kind of lacking in the bottom two lines. The top two I think you're going to be okay with, but with Kruger being kind of your veteran, which he already has 2 points, and he had 4 throughout the entire year last year, which is, you know, good to see that he's already got, you know, halfway to his points that he had from last year. Hopefully he's not peaking early.
So do you follow the Wolves at all, or?
The Wolves, not particularly. Unfortunately, they're for the Blue. They're like the Blues farm team, so it's like, feels kind of weird going to a Wolves game and voting and like basically rooting for them when they're actually for our biggest rival. The Rockford Ice Hogs are actually our farm team. So what's going on with our Chicago Wolves?
No, it's just that I was wondering, because they've got a couple of games coming up this weekend as well.
Okay.
That are on television. And, you know, if you're really wanting to see hockey and you don't have cable, uh-huh. It's something to look at. But I remember watching a Hawks game, and also at the same time there was a Wolves game on at the same time, and it was like day and night, going back and forth. The Hawks and the team they were playing were zipping around the ice, and the Wolves looked like they were in slow motion. It was a lot slower game, but just so that we have, they have a great logo, by the way. So
the Wolves, yeah. It is pretty cool. If it hasn't changed from what I remember, just having the Wolf kind of with his mouth open and it's a pretty cool logo, just like the Blackhawks. I think that's it for the hockey part of it. The only team we haven't really covered is we got the Bulls. They're going to be starting their season next week. I think it's the 25th, correct?
Yes.
And they play, I believe it's the...
No, the 27th.
Okay. I know, and I think it's the Celtics they start the season off
with.
So that'll be a good one to start off with. And I actually read an article of the possible reason why they decided to get rid of Noah and bring in Lopez.
Why is that?
He is actually, the last two seasons, played every game. He hasn't taken a day off.
Lopez?
Mm-hmm. Last year he played all 82 games. So I think they're looking for that consistency from their big man because, you know, Taj was a little banged up last year. You had Joakim Noah, who was out for a little while, and you had Pau Gasol, who was out. So if anything, you're going to have Lopez down there most games. He seems to be pretty, sturdy. And that's always a good thing to have when you know that you're going to have your big man showing up. And he seemed to actually have a pretty good run late in the season last season. He was averaging, they were saying from January to the end of the season, he was averaging about 18 points a game and 12 rebounds a game, where his normal average was about a little bit less than 10 points a game and 8 points or 8 rebounds a game. So he was actually quite a bit higher, living up to what New York originally thought his potential could be. So if we can get 18 points from him and 12 rebounds, I'm okay with that. That's, you know, that's pretty great, actually.
Yeah. Well, was that because someone was hurt and he was getting more minutes, or?
Porzingis was struggling, and so they decided to play Lopez instead because he was actually more consistent. So Porzingis wasn't hurt at all. It was just because Lopez was playing so much more consistent, they decided to play him. So when I read that article and I was like, well, hopefully he can keep that going, because if he does that with the Bulls, that's a piece that I don't think a lot of people are thinking is going to hold his own. And if he does repeat what he did in the end of last year, all the way through the season, he's going to have a pretty good, you know, spot. And I think a lot of Bulls fans will love seeing this pickup that can maybe snuck under the radar, maybe.
Right.
So.
Yeah.
You were saying something about Wade earlier. You were telling me, which I think some of our listeners enjoy.
Yeah, there was a report last week that Dwayne Wade was being interviewed. And you notice how mostly all the interviews are with Wade and not Jimmy Butler, who mm-hmm. is supposed to be his team. But anyway, Wade said that there had been discussion of LeBron James, Dwayne Wade, and Chris Bosh coming to the Bulls instead of going to Miami. And it didn't happen because the Bulls could not get rid of Luol Deng's contract.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't understand. That's what I wanted to say earlier when I mentioned it to you. Why would you? It seems to me, I guess they just wanted to play together, but it seems to me that if you could play with LeBron James, Dwayne Wade, and you have Luol Deng, that's pretty much just as good as Bosh.
Yep.
So if you're trying to create a super team that can, you know, win a championship, I don't think you're going to be that much of a slouch if you have Luol Deng instead of Bosh. But I guess they just had their hearts dead set on having all three of them together.
Right. Yeah, there was something where I think they had conversations of, like, they wanted to be together, the three of them. And you were kind of saying that the Derrick Rose, they felt, was kind of a piece that they really could care less if it was there or not. It sounded like they were kind of, Derrick Rose could have went someplace else and they would have been fine with that.
Yeah, maybe the Bulls didn't want to do that at the time, because he said that if it was just Rose, LeBron, and Wade, then if you got three people who demand the ball, which, you know, is pretty much what they have now.
Right.
So.
Yeah,
the only difference being is that, you know, I guess he had more of a choice back then.
Yeah. Yeah, it's tough finding out this information after the fact. I'm glad that it's so far removed. I think if I heard it, like, right after the situation, and I probably would have been a little bit more upset, but it kind of sucks that, you know, that could have potentially been an extra, you know, three or so titles for Chicago, which would have been really cool. And I think LeBron would have loved to be able to follow Michael Jordan's shoes, because I know he really looked up to Michael Jordan. And
That's what Wade said.
Yeah.
He said that LeBron was interested in coming to Chicago because he was a big Jordan fan. Mm-hmm. And the thing of it is that at that time, there was talk about the Bulls trying to land LeBron James.
Yep.
I thought that'll never happen. That's ridiculous.
Yep.
But now you find out, hey, maybe they had more of a shot than you thought.
Yeah. And I know even around then that they were trying to like bring him in, and he came in, but neither Rose or, well, Rose was the only one who really didn't want to like make a big deal out of it. He didn't want to court them. He's like, if they want to come here, they want to come here. And nothing that I can do will make them want to come here. Like Joakim Noah kind of came and met them at the airport and gave them like the whole spiel, you know, how most uh-huh. teams will try and give them the what Chicago would look like if you came here and we won championships, that type of thing. Rose didn't want to have anything to do with it. And I just wonder if that kind of rubbed them the wrong way of, hey, all these
could
other teams
been,
are courting
yeah.
us and hey, you yeah. don't want to come and, you know, get championships with us. Like that might rub people the wrong way. Cause well, that could have gotten us over the hump. It definitely seemed like it should have.
Well, maybe Rose wanted to do it himself without those yeah. two guys.
Yeah.
But, you know, he did the same thing with the guy he's playing with now, Carmelo Anthony.
Yeah.
And it was just so funny that, you know, most the rest of the team courted Carmelo, but
yeah.
Rose did not go to a dinner or something that they had.
Right.
So, and now he's playing in New York.
Mm-hmm.
And so we'll see how that all plays out. But yeah, they have this new player, Michael Carter Williams.
Yes, they decided to trade Tony Snell over to the Bucks, and so the Bucks have Tony Snell, who actually is dealing with an injury, and then we have Michael Carter Williams, who came over, and he can kind of play both point guard and shooting guard, which is, you know, good to have that versatility.
Yeah, but there's a couple things that bother me
okay.
about him. First of all, he was Rookie of the Year when he was drafted by Philadelphia
uh-huh.
A couple of years ago. And also, when he came to the Bulls, they asked him what number he wanted, and he said number one. Now, number one was his number when he was in college and also when he was with Philadelphia. And I thought, well, great. You know, he wants to go and sort of start over and erase his time in Milwaukee because maybe he didn't get used correctly, maybe
right.
something went wrong.
Mm-hmm.
And so I thought, well, you know, this is pretty good. But then after the game, he decided not to wear number one out of deference to Derrick Rose.
Okay.
And I don't know, I kind of have a problem with that.
Yeah.
I don't understand why he would even be thinking that way.
Yeah, it's not like the number's retired. I know, like, even when LeBron, he changed his number from 23 to 6, wasn't it? He did that a few years back because he felt that 23 should have been a retired number for all teams.
Uh-huh.
I remember him, like, having, like, actually saying that after a game that he felt like 23 should be retired, and now I think he wears it again. He's wearing 23 now, but he got the blessing from Michael Jordan to wear number 23, and that was the only way he was going to wear 23 is if Michael Jordan told him he could, which I thought was really cool. And so when you go to a team and they had a number one, if that guy isn't retired, wear the number you want to wear. And, you know, I don't think anyone would have really, you know, thought any differently of him if that's the number he wore when he was in Philadelphia and in college. By all means, wear that number. It wouldn't have bothered me any.
Right.
So.
Yeah, it's almost as if he is displaying a lack of confidence. You know, if you watch the Bears now, I forget who it is, but there's a player who wears number 50, and every time you see number 50, you think Singletary. At
right.
least I do.
Yep.
But still, you know. It's a new guy, so he has to make that number his own.
Right.
And I think the same thing should have happened with Michael Carter Williams. He should have just took the number, and then through his play, eventually it would have become his, and people would have forgotten about Derrick Rose.
Yep, definitely. Yeah, I don't entirely agree with him deciding not to wear the number that he wore before. The only thing I can think of is in his mind, he feels like because people saw Derrick Rose as, like, you know, the Chicago's, you know, he was our Chicago guy. Maybe he feels there was more respect for him than maybe what was really here, because by the time that Derrick Rose left, everybody was kind of like, good, we need to move on. So I think there are still some Derrick Rose fans, but I think he's holding him in higher regard than what is actually the fan base holds him as. Like, in his mind, I think he's thinking that the Chicago fan base is holding Derrick Rose in such a high regard that wearing number one would be disrespectful to Derrick Rose and to the city. And I don't think that's the case.
No, I don't. Like I said, I thought that he was trying to make an effort to revert back to his style of play when he first came into the league.
And
if he does that, then that'll be great for the Bulls because, he's rookie of the year. But I don't know. I always thought he was a very good player.
Yeah.
But when he went to Milwaukee, he sort of disappeared. So
yeah, I don't think they used him far enough to be able to give him the opportunity to be successful. So the few times that they had last year where a few players were injured and he was in, he actually seemed to be doing really, really well. He was a good assist guy. I think he was somewhere around 12, 13 points a game. And had like 8 to 10 assists each game when he was actually playing the few games that he was able to get in there. So I think he's a good point guard. I think he had a pretty decent shooting percentage and was good at free throw. And then he had to get those boards as well. He'd get about 3 or 4 boards. And from your guard position, having that, that's really, really good, I think. So I think he still has it. He just needs to be used enough. And hopefully the Bulls are able to figure out a situation where they can use him, and maybe he's someone who can back up Dwayne Wade a little bit, I guess.
Yeah, and also Rondo.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. So, we'll see.
Yep. Well, it's been a good show. Yeah. I enjoyed this show as usual, there, Brian. This is the No Look Pass. I'm Brett Shishkoff.
Brian Hawkins.
Thank you all for listening, and we will be back next week for another great show talking about the thing we love, which is sports. Have a great week, and hopefully we'll see you next week with the Cubs actually in a World Series for the first time in a very, very long time.
All right.
Talk to you soon. Have a great week, everybody. This is No Look Pass, signing out.